Well, good evening, everyone. Thank you for being here. I trust we'll have a good evening together. I didn't come here with the intention of speaking all night. I'd like this to be an open discussion time. Even as I share, I have a list of notes here I want to go through. But as I share, if there's something you want to say or some questions, feel free to ask them. There's some people here that are smarter and know more than I do, and they'll answer your questions. So let's just have a good evening together as we think of this topic of AI. Really appreciated that last song. There's a phrase that stood out to me. I make thee forever the guide of my heart. And I think if that's truly our intention, I think we can live in this world of AI and all the things that are there, and we can end up at the right place. So maybe before we go into this, we'll just bow our heads and pray. Father in heaven, we come to you in Jesus' name this evening. Lord, you know we've gathered together this evening, and we want to just talk some about AI, how it have an understanding of what it is and how it is affecting us or could affect us. And also we just desire to be guided by you and by your word and by your spirit, desire to have just input from the entire brotherhood of how we can stay on the right track, walking with you, doing your will, being pure and holy in the midst of the world that's changing, midst of the world that is going the wrong direction. So Lord, just come bless our evening. Pray that you would just guide our conversation here tonight. And I pray that you would just help all of us to grasp and understand the topic. Lord, it's something that I don't fully understand myself. And yet I just pray that as we all share together that we could have an understanding enough that we could have solid direction in our lives. So just come and guide us and bless us. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. As I was thinking of this topic just a little bit tonight, I was thinking of Romans chapter 12, and I'll just read verse 2. It's a familiar one, but I think it's very fitting. It says, "And be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God." And I think as we live in this world and there's AI around us and a lot of other things, we want to be transformed by the renewing of our minds. And that only happens by God and His Word, by the Holy Spirit. That's the only source for it. If our mind is shifted outside of that, we're probably being conformed to this world. So, as we think of AI, I had been asked to speak at the Agape meeting, and I just gave kind of a brief overview of trying to help us understand what AI is. And as I look around this room, there's some people I'm sure that know more about it than I do, and I trust we can just help each other and as we talk about it. But the first thing I want to just think about is even just simple as even outside of AI as a computer. What is a computer? How many in this room really understand how a computer works? Let's see your hand. Cornelius, thought of you that you probably have the best grasp on how a computer really works better than I do. You know, I've for a long time been intrigued by computers, but I would say I've been more on the hardware side of stuff. But just thinking very simply how a computer works, and the foundation of a computer is the actual data, the information that's stored on a computer. Now, we know if we take a computer apart and we pull it apart, we don't see lines of words like you do in a book. We don't see pictures. So there's a way that a computer is storing stuff. And on the very basic level, it's computer code. How many of you heard that term, computer code? So everything that is stored on a computer is in code, which means that you have one thing and it stands for something else. So if you want to go on a computer and you write the letter A, how does that look if you'd open your computer and go inside? How does this letter A look? Very simply, it's your computer stores data simply by something either being switched on or off, or you also can say a 0 or a 1. It has power or it doesn't. And then something that's on or off, you imagine here we have a long list of switches, and you go along, one is on, switch two is off, and on. That's really how computer code works. So for the letter A, you would simply write it as like 0100001. And that stands for a capital A. If you want to make a lowercase a, you go 0110001. So if you'd pull your computer apart, that's what you find, a bunch of zeros and ones, or something switched on or off. So that's the very foundation of everything that's stored on a computer, is just on or off, or zeros or ones. And Cornelius probably knows better, is there different ways that they're now, like different, if it's a hard drive or a solid state drive, some of those might, I'm not sure how they store all that. Just a little thing that's either on or off. So we talk about large amounts of data. It's simply that everything in your computer is stored that way. So if we think of how computers started, they were very, very simple, you know, and as they've been able to process code faster, they've been able to put a lot more information in it. And, you know, it goes from very simple to being color to, you know, your computer screens now having high definition, very detailed pictures. It's all driven by the amount of data that you can use, both the volume of it and how fast it can go through a computer. So if we think of AI, there's a sense where AI is really not new. It seems like it's kind of gotten to a certain point that it has been able to be used in certain ways, and now we call it AI. But there's a sense where AI has been around since the 60s, really. Probably some of the earliest that some of us would have bumped into AI would have been when Microsoft Office had the little Clippy assistants. How many of you remember that? You had an old copy of Microsoft Office and a little Clippy assistant would pop up and it would try to help you learn how to use Microsoft Office. That would have been a very primitive form of AI. So if we look at what is the difference between now and then, the most simple explanation, it's more complicated than this, but the most simple explanation is the difference in the power of the computer chips and the raw amount of data that it's drawing from. That's the difference. So if we think of back to 97 when we had the Clippy assistant on our little computer at home, back then your processor speed was running at about 20 megaflops. So a flop is a floating point of operation per second, which is counting how many equations that your computer can solve in 1 second. So back then, it was 20 megaflops. Today, like the OpenAI Microsoft Data Center, they're running at 5 to 10 exaflops, which is 350 trillion times faster. Think of that, like, you know, what we had in 97 that we're running to what OpenAI is using now is 350 trillion times faster. Okay, so if you think of the difference, why it can do what it can do now, it's because it's 350 trillion times faster, your processing speed. Your system RAM back then probably would have been 32 megabytes. I'm trying to remember. I almost think the first computer that I had used was something like that, 32 megabytes. Where, you know, the AI center, the OpenAI one, would be using 80 million gigabytes today, or 80 petabytes, and that's 2.5 billion times more. So your system RAM that you had back then is now running 2.5 billion times faster, or more RAM. And then if you think of even just the energy consumption, back then it would have been like 150 watts that your computer would have been drawing. And now, like one data center is running at maybe 1.9 gigawatts, which is 12.6 million times more electricity. So it's using a lot of electric, a lot of power. Electric is power, right? It's energy. So if you look at those numbers, and they keep changing, but I just want to give you the picture of before it was very simple, and now it's big. You know, it was small, and now it's big. So let's say on a hard drive, back then it maybe would have had 2 to 4 gigabytes of data. Today, they are feeding it quadrillions of words of text code and pictures simultaneously. So your computer would have been drawing from just a little hard drive, and now it's the amount of data going into the processor is hard for us to even really grasp. Quadrillions of words of text code and pictures simultaneously. So if you go on AI and you say, ask it a question, what does a rabbit look like? you literally have quadrillions of words of code, text, and pictures going through that thing to give you your answer. One other just example to give us the idea of how much more it's being able to do. If we use an analogy of in 1997, a computer, the speed that it was going would be the speed of an ant crawling across the sidewalk. So if you look down, you see the ant crawl along and say that was the speed of an ant in 1997. Today, like ChatGPT, it would be moving fast enough to cross from one end of the observable universe, one end to the other one in the blink of an eye. That's how much faster it is. So it gives you an idea of something that's powerful. So then we come to this thing, and we think of power has great potential, but it also has great danger. The greater the power, the more you can do with it, but also the greater potential for destruction. So if you think of a little toy tractor that some of you have at home, it hardly has any power, right? Maybe someone has a remote control one that, you know, can go around, but hardly has any power. What can you do with your tractor? Well, you can play a little bit. You can maybe haul some sand, you know, a little bit around the sandbox, but can't do much. Then you think of, okay, so how much destruction could your little toy tractor do? Not much. And somebody could trip over it and fall, or, you know, that's about worst case scenario. So then you think of a big John Deere tractor. It's a lot of power. What can you do? Well, you can plow hundreds of acres a day. You can do a lot. But then you ask the question, okay, what potential for destruction is there? Quite a bit. I mean, it's a useful tool. It's great that we have big John Deere tractors in the world, and yet you have to be careful. So I think that whole picture, if we bring that back into AI, you know, it has a whole lot more potential than computers ever had before. You know, I can tell it to translate the entire Bible into a language, and I'll do it just like that. And well, that's great. But it also has potential for destruction. So then we also think of another thing that I just put in here. You know, the Industrial Revolution came for our muscles. It allows us to do more, and yet the machines came for our muscles. We don't need them as much anymore. But the AI revolution is coming for our brain. I think that through a little bit. It can be useful, and yet it's wanting to outsource our thinking, outsource our need for using our brain, and that's a concern. Automating thinking. And again, some of that, it allows us to do more than we used to. So it's all bad, and yet there's a real potential, especially with the younger generation coming up and using it to not learn to exercise their brain, and it actually being a big problem. So how does AI work? AI works by finding patterns in massive amounts of data to make predictions or decisions. It doesn't think like a human. Instead, it uses math and code to shape its output. It's not some mystical thing being living in a computer somewhere, but it's a result of faster computer chips, more data storage, and more electricity. The other thing that I would say shaped some of what allowed AI to become what it is now, earlier computer models were very rule-based. If this, then that. Whereas now it's more using probability. And it's okay to use trial and error. Rather than always being right, it just scans through massive amounts of data and says, okay, it's probable that this is what you're wanting or needing. If you say, if you tell AI to create a picture of a rabbit, AI will have millions or billions of pictures of rabbits labeled as this is a rabbit. So it kind of knows that, okay, a rabbit, it'll have long ears. So it's very probable if you ask it to make a picture of a rabbit that whatever comes out will have long ears. And it's they've actually found they're kind of hitting a wall with some of that, where if they have, say, a million pictures of actual rabbits and you feed it in there, it can create an image of a rabbit and it looks fairly good. It looks like a rabbit. But if they feed that picture back in, and after a certain amount of generations, all at once the rabbits start changing. So that's one limitation that they're finding with AI. Like, the more info that they can get from actual humans, the more accurate it stays. But if it's starting to feed back in, it's actually losing some of its accuracy. Okay, so how will we encounter AI here? And be interesting just to hear from you all. Like, where do you bump into AI? It seems like it's here and there, pops up. So I have a couple ones here. Say if you have a computer, Microsoft Pilot. If you have a Microsoft computer, it helps you summarize documents, it writes emails. If you go to Google and you do a Google search, AI will pop up. Right now, buying products through AI is a little bit limited. There's some, Amazon has Alexa, where you can, literally say, Alexa, send me some paper towels, and it'll find where the best source is, and it'll ship it to your door. That's actually expected to grow quite a bit in the next number of years, where people will tell AI, this is what I need, and it will try to source what it thinks you will want at the best price and everything. So that's one thing that we'll see more, I think, of people using AI to buy, rather than currently a lot of people, you Google something and it shows a list of websites and then you can choose from those. AI will like automate some of that, where you just, hey, I need this, and it'll give you what you need. AI can be used for creating documents, signs, autocorrect. That's, you could say, a simple form of AI that's been around for a long time. Microsoft Word or something. You spell something wrong and it pops up and says, hey, you did it wrong. rephrasing writings for grammar, customer support. That's a big one that I would say probably more and more of us are seeing. Either as you call in and you get some automated person answering, or you have to go to a website and you chat, and you know it AI is there to sometimes make it easier, sometimes harder. There's varied outcomes with that. AI instructions how to do things, how to do repairs. That's something that's you know, probably some of us have bumped into. You want to know how to do something, and AI will tell you. Business software with automations. That's another big one. Probably that some of us will bump into. And I'd like to hear from you all. What are ways that you've bumped into AI or using AI or so forth? So now let's think of maybe some dangers. One thing that I see with AI, it probably will unify thinking. And there's one part of that that doesn't sound so bad. If you look across the globe today, there's all sorts of thinking, and some is very bad thinking. But it seems, you know, going into the next 20 years, probably AI will bring a unity of thinking. More people will be influenced by it, and I guess we'll have to see how all that pans out. I know for us as a congregation, that's scary. We don't want that, and yet out there, it probably will happen. So one danger is it will tell you what it thinks is most likely to be true or what it thinks that you want. So we're used to, and that's how we need to think of more black and white, true or false. That's how we think. Something is true or it's a lie. AI will just boom, give you something based on what it thinks you want or what it thinks is most likely to be true. And it prevents it in a very confident, convincing way. There's something about it, like just it seems, you know, us as humans, we kind of have this, most of us have a certain amount of normal skepticism. If someone gives us new information, it kind of goes through a filter here, and we're like, is this true? Does that make sense? Is it not? And it seems AI has kind of a way of almost bypassing that, where it's just boom here, and it presents it as the truth, whether it is or not. I think the further the AI goes, probably the more that we'll have to almost really quite, is it actually true or not? There's the danger of harmful influence. So AI in itself is, you'd say, not necessarily evil or wrong or whatever, but it is condensing information from all the material in the world that it can possibly get its fingers on. And it's condensing that, and if you think of all the people in this world who are not following God, who are ungodly, who are in sin, who are whatever, it's reaching from all those different places and presenting it to you. So there's definitely the danger of bad influence, harmful influence. The danger of intellectual laziness, I already talked about that a little bit. But rather than learning to use our mind, we just, boom, AI. Here's one, replacing godly authorities in our life. And I use this as an example. Cornelius, how long does it take for you to get to church? 20 minutes, okay. So I can get my phone out and I can search your address and I can see that it's actually 18 minutes. So, you know, you're off by 2 minutes. Now, if you think of that in your everyday life, what if your children will start to, instead of asking dad, ask AI? And AI will be actually maybe more accurate. Now, also not. But there's definitely that danger of godly authorities being replaced by AI that presents something in a very convincing way and appears to be the truth. I would see that as a big danger, you know. Let's say you sit around at home and you're talking about a certain subject and you know, the reality is none of us know everything, but we pull out our phone and boom, we know the exact answer. It appears that way, may not be. But maybe our teenagers won't need our dad anymore. That's a real danger. All right, so we think of danger. Here's something I just wrote down, and I often danger is first overstated and the worst case scenarios are talked about. So any time something new comes around or whatever, even like AI, I think it's something that often the danger is maybe overstated in ways where you think, oh, it's going to do so and so and so. And the very worst case scenarios are talked about. So then a little bit of time passes, and then people start to get familiar with whatever the subject is and start realizing that it's not exactly the way it was talked about. Maybe it wasn't as bad as what it was talked about. So we could use that for AI, like first, oh, this is, you know, end of the world, you know. In a year from now, robots are going to start walking into church and they're going to be all the... And you have way worst case scenarios. And then after a while, we realize, oh, well, that's not quite the way it is. But then people start getting familiar with the danger. But then is when people, and I say... high risk category. I don't know if that's the right term. People are susceptible to that danger. Start getting negatively affected. And say for AI, I'm not sure if I should read this list in here or not, but I just will. But people who I would say is being more at risk of being negatively affected, you know, the first one would be adventuresome people who want to be the first in everything. Then it can be people who are maybe some isolated, people who are lonely, people who are hurting, people who resist authority, youth and struggling families. Older singles. I was an older single for a long time. And then some of those people start being affected by it. And that's, and it can, I think all of us are probably in a high-risk category in some way. And yet it seems some of those things that I would say we have to look out for. Chatting with AI is dangerous. You know, people who are, say, lonely, and you start chatting with AI, is very dangerous. All right, so I put down here, don't use AI for spiritual guidance, to create spiritual content, for companionship or relationship advice. And I'm sure the list can be a lot wider than that. But anyway, those are some thoughts that I had shared, and I'd like to hear from you all. We didn't really talk about it. I should maybe go sit down. I'm not sure how can we best have a discussion about this. Do we have different people just give some thoughts, or does someone have? Okay. I don't know, can we maybe start? Yes, Arlen.
So my understanding of AI is pretty limited, but when you use the term AI, I think I'm getting a picture that's a broad term. So if I do a Google search, the first thing comes up is it gives me an AI suggestion of an answer to what I ask. Mm-hmm. But how can you, like what you're talking about, do some of these other things? Pretty much my search is through Google. So how would I go about chatting with AI? Or how would I use AI in a profitable way? I don't know if my question makes sense or not.
Yeah. Does someone have an answer for that?
So, on the business side of things, you can buy a prescription same as you do like a Microsoft Office, and that allows you a deeper, more thorough type of AI where it can help you with writing letters, it can help you with figuring things out that are difficult to figure out. Clint Wolf, for example, recently he had his attorney try to figure, some legal stuff out, and they couldn't figure it out. Ask AI, and they had that in just a couple minutes. They had it, and they had spent a lot of money trying to figure it out otherwise, and they weren't able to. For us, we do use it some, for different things at work, and so it can be useful in some of those areas. On the negative side, you can download a free chat, GPT on your phone. You can download it. It's free. It's just, pretty simple. Or you can have the paid version, or you can go to whatever length. And, you can go however deep and however far you want with different types of subscriptions for that. And so I'm not sure if I'm answering the question, but that's just a little. I mentioned in the brothers meeting, but recently we had at work, we had a thing where our inspector for the for insurance came through, and he didn't like that we were spraying our sheds out in the open. He didn't like that, and they were not going to insure us. So we looked at different things, and it was going to cost us a lot more money. And eventually, Brandon went on and did a search for the specific paint and things that we're using, and was able to locate specific data that we submitted to them. And when they read that, they were like, "Oh, you can, we will insure you, and everything's good." Okay, just, you know, that's the type of thing that that, you know, it can be used for. There's a lot more, but, you know, that's just the tip of the iceberg.
I don't know if this dovetails with any of, like Arlen was sharing, but so a lot of the search engines have more AI components or built into the results of your searches. Longer ago, you had to be, it took a lot more experience and knowing how to search to get the results that you specifically are after. Specific terminology made a huge difference how I wrote my searches when I was troubleshooting specifically on computer things. I think where that has shifted and changed a lot is with AI, you can do a lot more of just explaining the errors that you're running into, the issues that you're having, and it has such a vast amount of data that it has at its disposal that it usually is able to narrow it down and point you in the right direction. One thing that I would also say that encourage people to, I mean, definitely be careful or carefulness. But in regular searches, usually you're pointed to websites or locations where the information is, and then you go to that site and you get the information. With AI, they don't necessarily always give you the sources, but if you dig enough, often you can get to the sources, and that, I think, still is something that's fairly important, knowing your sources, knowing where your information is actually coming from can help you determine the validity or how much you can trust it. I can share more what I use it for than maybe more broadly. My corner of it is mostly in the line of troubleshooting in large part. So you might get a specific error or a specific thing that's even difficult to solve, and it will oftentimes give you steps to try. And sometimes it's actually fairly frustrating where it says, well, go to your settings and so you should see something. And it's like, it's not specific enough. And you have to go deeper. And it's just generalizing kind of the things that would normally be, and it's not specific. But then a lot of times it does help me a lot too. That's kind of where I use it the most. I know that a little more on the software side, there again it was troubleshooting some difficult things that they were able to, it would help them point in the right direction, able to solve some difficult things to locate. You can use AI to do coding. Now, for like programming, I would probably throw out some cautions on that, because from the perspective of you can get yourself into things deeper than you understand, and then there's the potential for more security vulnerabilities, et cetera, if you're not the person auditing and making sure, oh, it's doing it this way. If you understand what it's actually doing and follow through, it can be a positive thing, but if you just go with it and not really double checking it, there's more dangers in that. So I think it was brought out very well. You know, there's a lot of power there. There's a lot of capabilities, a lot of whatever can be used in a good way, but there's also don't use it blindly. Use it wisely, carefully. And I another point that Matt alluded to, and I really think it's an important thing, that it can make you lazy or take you away from the thing of critical thinking and things like that. You start relying on it. So I think we need to be conscientious and purposeful in guarding against that.
Yeah, thank you. probably one thing with Arlen, the AI is actually, there's, I don't know, it would be fair to say it's probably thousands, tens of thousands of AI models out there. It's not just one specific. And there's various ways of accessing them, whether it's going to a website or through search or so forth. Or there's even AI models that you can download on your home computer, and it would use the same principles, although it wouldn't quite have the power. But it's and then the other thing that you had mentioned, I think, is also important to bring out. Don't put personal information, credit cards, social security numbers, anything in AI. Like, that's not secure at all. You might be trying to do something and it seems like the right thing just to feed in your information, but it's not secure at all. Who knows where it would end up at? So don't give it personal information. It's like your friend that doesn't keep secrets. Yes.
Am I thinking right that apps like ChatGPT are the ones that, or like in that category, are the ones that act more as a person, versus if you just do like a Google search and it has like an AI summary or something like that, that's not really as much as like interacting with a person. But on like ChatGPT or something like that, you can actually have a conversation with it to where it actually acts more like a person and wants to be your friend that way. Am I thinking right with that, or is that not accurate? Just in response to what you had asked, Arlen, about how people find companionship with AI.
I think some of those you can access it directly from there. Like on the first screen that pops up, it might not be, but you can go in deeper from there. So it's not necessarily fair and safe to say if I just do that, say my children can't go beyond that. Are there any specific AI models that anybody would know that would be better, and some that are worse? Or, has anybody dug in that deep, or is that something maybe we should set the technology committee on sometime? I mean, some of them are still changing, but yes.
Is it, you said, a better one, or is there a better one than AI? I didn't know there was options of choosing. I guess after probably about 18 years of listening and reading and listening some more, out of interviews on podcasts, listening people live, sitting down, I guess the thing that struck me in the past and years ago already, long before now, is if I build a machine I know how it works, right? Correct? If I would build a car to drive down the road and I build it from start to finish, I would do everything on it. I created it. I would know how it works. What took me for a spin, the actual inventors, the founders, the builders of AI can't outright answer how it works. So with that, for me personally, I made a decision to be careful with it. Because if you create something that you don't know how it completely works, we can put decimals on the board, we can have discussions all we want. We can say it's not alive, or we can say a lot of things. But if we create something that we don't know how it totally works, I create this product and you interview me and I can't tell you 100% how it works and why it works the way it does, I think there's a danger to be cautious
yeah.
about.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. There's a sense in it where some of it, they kind of turned it loose.
I want to see if I can get it again. I don't know if I can. In that article, it said that it's ambiguous and ambitious, the system is. It is worrisome that the system will not go the way that it was programmed to go. That was one of them. With that, that was a warning sign to me. I'm not saying not to use it, but I think it will erode us spiritually if we leave that system become part of our life. We will erode spiritually.
Yeah.
They build it, and yet they've allowed it to make millions of choices, and they don't know what causes it to go in certain directions at times. So there's that sense where there's times where they simply shut models down.
Do you have any guidance on, there are some AI models that when asked to make pictures of humans, they can do different all kinds of stuff, including pornography. The way I understand, they don't all do that, but there are some that do. Do you have any guidance as to how to sort through that, or what to do about that?
I don't. I know you had mentioned Grok at one point. Yes, Joel up here. I do know certain ones have different guardrails on them, but yes, go ahead. Okay. But it was just a question that popped into my mind is, should we have a discussion which ones are more safe than others? I mean, I don't know that we could, well, yeah, I'm sure there's no AI model that I would give my 10-year-old and say, okay, this one's safe, like, go do whatever you want. There's nothing like that, I don't think.
Yeah.
No.
It will lead you. There is no thing where it goes up against a guardrail and says, I can't do it no more.
No. 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 But I think it'd be good to have a discussion or have some people dig into some of that. Is there something that's more more or less. But anyway, Joel, go ahead.
No, I don't want to interrupt that thought there, but I was just going to ask, is it a good idea for me, just on my personal phone, to have ChatGPT or whatever other, just for helping me with searches, or is it advisable? Is it not advisable? You know, unless I have a really good reason. You know, I guess that's my question. Is it something that we should just kind of freely, more, I mean, obviously if we have a smartphone, it's there in a search. But I was just, it just occurred to me, is it, am I missing out on something maybe here? I don't know.
Yeah, any thoughts on that?
So I will say, on a personal level, to have it on your phone, it's just going to be like any other search engine. Whatever information that you put in, if it's a free version, it's free data for the world. So it's going to be, I know that if you get the paid versions on it, you can turn off so they don't actually use your data to train. But if you just get the free version, yeah. So then that begs the question, okay, what do you want to use it for? It can be super helpful, but just not, again, like Matt said, putting personal information on. Overall, for myself, I found, I guess there's three main models. The one is OpenAI or ChatGPT. The other one is Claude, and then the other one is Grok. Those are sort of the three main frontier models. Underneath those, there's a whole myriad of other AIs that they have. For me, OpenAI or ChatGPT, I don't really use that one a lot. That one seems to be, of all of them, the most, lies to you the most. From my experience, it does okay with like editing pictures and stuff, but actually information, it can be super helpful, but you have to question the answers more than what you do some of the other models. And I also heard recently that they partnered up with some big government initiative to get funding. And so then that just gives them access to all the more stuff. So personally, I steer away from ChatGPT more. So, I mean, I use it once in a while, but Claude, I use Claude some. I use Claude and Grok. Each model has its own pros and cons. So, yeah.
Yeah, advertising is something you don't see just a whole lot on it. Some of it is happening in the background. But same as Google, like first it was everything organic searches, and it would rate everything on based on what I thought it was good. And then after a while, you could start paying to have your whatever appear at the top of the list. And some of that is happening a little bit behind the scenes on AI, and it will become, I think, more and more prevalent. Like, they're not putting these big data centers up for free. Like, they're getting their money from various sources, and some are paying for data, some are advertising some. But that will keep changing AI, too, like the advertising part of it. Everything ultimately out there kind of goes back to money. that's what moves everything. Yes.
That was kind of my question. You know, there's
how many more times sinners in the world than Christians? So why would they cater to the Christians with their information? And on a business level, whether it's for personal or corporate, why would Google and any of those companies cater to the Christians? Why would they not share the opinion of the sinner to the whole wide world? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
From their financial gain perspective.
I don't know if somebody have any perspective on that. It seems currently it's the AI model is pretty friendly to Christians at this point. You know, I wanted to test that, and I asked ChatGPT why Anabaptists should go to war. Why should they? And it actually pretty much told me that would be going against long-held beliefs and, you know, these Bible verses, and it told me I shouldn't. So currently it seems to still be fairly friendly, but I'm sure you could flip that around on the other side and ask other questions, and it would be completely the other direction. So the bottom line is we don't go to the AI for answers to spiritual questions. That's not safe. But it does seem currently, yes, Chris.
How about using AI to help me get an opening ready? Is that a good thing?
Any thoughts?
Just suggested to my wife tonight, me and her would sit down, and it's in our earliest part of our life that we can remember, just sit for a couple of hours and talk into a recording device, download that on AI, and ask for a book to be printed. I'm told I can get one. I'm told it's available. So if we use AI to prepare sermons, my 16-year-old boy is ready to preach Sunday morning. All he needs to go is an AI, put in what a non-resistant Christian life should look like out of the New Testament. It'll write him a 20-page message. All right. That's the danger that it will have on our Christian and our spiritual walk if we go into it all the way. There's no need for praying. There's no need for searching. There's no need for study. Just Sunday mornings, an hour before we go to church, print out a sermon. I think those are the types of things we need to be careful about.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. Here, some time ago, I was trying to think this through. So, long term, like, what specific is the difference between that and someone who's not born again, who's not walking in the Spirit of God, preaching something, and we... Is there a difference? What is that difference? I 100% agree with you. And yet, maybe sometimes we've not been so careful in other areas that we should be more careful. Yes, Joel has a... Oh, yes, go ahead.
So there's actually scientific studies out there what using AI does for a writer, like how for inspiration, topics, that type of stuff. Once they get that incorporated into them, they lose 50% of their emotional connection with their readers. Hmm. And it's not proven that that comes back to them immediately once they actually stop. And I'm curious whether the same would apply to the spiritual, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, wouldn't it affect how much you connect with biblical principles and actually connecting with the Spirit of God in your, just even in your personal study?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It was interesting to me thinking about writing and stuff, how that actually affects your brain. But that's more the writing side. What about the spiritual? I don't know.
Oh. Does it bypass a certain part of your spirit and your certain part of your brain? I don't know. That's still...
Again, I'm not commenting on that. I just had... I was thinking down the lines of a little bit of the what Chris said over there and what Joel was talking about. Just some concerns that I have about if it's used for a search engine, that's one thing. But once we use it for writing up things and actually doing some of our brain work as such, I'm not saying that for business, whatever that, but I think if we continually use it for things that maybe we should have gotten educated for rather than just doing with AI, I think the whole idea down the road for using it for doing an opening or a message is, will not look big anymore. I think it'll open the door wide open for that without us really realizing what happens. That's my concern. When we let it think for us in other areas, like I'm not a writer. If I want to write articles, I'd either have to sweat really hard or use AI. Yeah. And so I might lean toward using a little bit of AI and then just using it a little bit to prepare a sermon or opening. Just a couple of phrases here and there. It doesn't look so big anymore, but it takes away the praying and the time that should be spent in preparing. And I guess my warning is what I'm feeling is the thing of using it for thinking purposes that maybe we could have gotten educated for and would have been the traditional way to do it. If it's taking the place of that, I would hesitate to go there. I guess that's where I would see a problem.
Coming back to the thing of somebody getting up behind the pulpit and giving a sermon. I'm not going to use Joel for anything. If somebody would get up behind the pulpit and preach an hour sermon, and they would just be reading it off, how much impact would that have on my life? Like there's no, if my spirit is not aligned with what I'm saying, it's just dead words in my mind. There's a huge danger in that for sure. I think what you had brought up earlier too, Matt, about it taking away our thinking and what Joel was just mentioning here as well, how it's coming for our minds, that's a real thing. And I don't think we can, we can't let it take away that. And for a lot of people that are, so gung-ho about it, like this is the greatest thing that ever happened, they just start chatting with it and next thing they know, pretty much all their information, all their advice, all their whatever is coming from AI. And well, in reality, what is it actually like? What's AI's source of truth? So that's a very, in my mind, that's a very dangerous thing, very dangerous place to be at.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Mark.
It seems that we do well to have a great caution as we look at AI. It ought to be a tool that's used for specific purposes. In a similar way that a computer or a phone, it's a tool. It seems like there are times that even a phone is used as a toy, as a game. And when we start handing our children, our youth, some of these tools, I would just say it's probably not wise to just have those things readily available for, you know, we need to I'll just be clear on some of those things for, until there's enough maturity there to be able to use it as a tool, and then use it as a tool, and it's not a toy. It's a tool.
Yeah. I was thinking, you know, in today's world, knowledge is lifted up very highly. Is knowledge actually all that it's made out to be? You know, I think of my great-great-grandpa. He just lived down the road here. I don't know if he had any idea what Indiana looked like. I mean, just stop and think about that. I have no idea, did he actually know what Indiana looked like? Pretty confident he didn't know what California looked like. Today, we have knowledge. I mean, the Bible says knowledge will increase in the last days, and we see that. Like, I know how it looks in Australia. We have a lot of knowledge. And AI is promising a lot of knowledge. Is that really what we're going for? You know, even if Joel uses AI to produce a sermon, it might even be completely true. Might be right doctrine. Is that what we're going for? I think we're going for something beyond knowledge. But go ahead, Arlen.
Yeah, I think you brought out that the industrial revolution was after our muscles. And that's true. The products were invented to help us to get more done and not use as much muscle. And I can get a lot done with a machine, but my physical strength, there's other men that I have observed in our community that are around my age, and just by observation, they have a lot more strength than I do because they have abstained from different things, different mechanical devices. And so that's kind of has to do with our physical. But like you said, the AI is targeting our mind, and that's where our life is. Yeah, there are some life in our muscles, but if you know, like one of the brothers said, this thing is not designed by Christians for Christians. It's designed by the world for the world, and the Bible says the world's going to pass away. And so, yeah, I think, too, we need to, while it may have useful purposes, we do need to be very cautious, and I would be hesitant to use it for preparing sermons and things like that because it seems like it's going against not only our mind, but it's also going against our relationship with God.
I think it's healthy sometimes to be on our knees and something. Lord, what do we say? What do we do? What do we just not know, but pray and seek God? I think that's healthy. Yes.
I would definitely support that as well. I just sort of asked the question just to hear where everyone's at with that. But I'm definitely on board with it should not be used for spiritual content. It just it's not the true source.
Well, I think it's about time to wrap up. Does somebody have something else they'd like to share yet before we close? I don't consider it a finished topic necessarily. I guess we'll see where it goes from here. But thank you all for your input. Appreciate it. Does anybody have any announcements or anything that should be said before we close the service? If not, why don't we all just stand to our feet? Phil, if you want to maybe lead in closing prayer, and someone have one verse of song to close the service.